How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Sports Zone, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. This goes on and on. This is the most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. A lot of stuff to talk about here today. Tomorrow is the go-home edition of Monday Night Raw as we lead into the SummerSlam pay-per-view. We can talk about that. On Friday, we noted that Stephen Amell had an accident as he was training. He was doing some cleans or something. Something involved pulling the bar up towards his chin, like an upright row or a clean or whatever. And he cracked the bar on his jaw, bit his tongue, and cracked his jaw, apparently. He is back training again, so it looks like the match is still on at SummerSlam. The mixed tag match, Cody Rhodes and Wade Barrett against the Red Arrow and the Green Arrow. Of course, Brock Lesnar and Undertaker is the main event of the show. We could talk all about that. And last night, it was the finals of the G1 tournament. Nakamura and Tanahashi, they had one of the great matches of this or any recent year. A tremendous match they had last night in the finals. We'll talk to Mike Sempervivi about that. I watched the entire show. So if you want to talk about the G1 tournament, apparently there were some great matches earlier this weekend as well, involving AJ Styles, among others. So if you saw any of those and want to give any suggestions for what people should watch, you can call in today and do so. Of course, New Japan World is the New Japan version of the WWE Network. It is 999 yen per month, which comes out to about $8.30. So if you signed up 1 month ago for $8.30, you got access to the entire G1 tournament, which is an amazing bargain. We're going to be joined by Mike. We'll talk about that. Start taking phone calls a little bit later on. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. 2 hours here today on Sunday. Got a lot of stuff to talk about today. The G1 SummerSlam will be taking your phone calls a little bit later on. So stand by. Everybody listening live. Don't forget, the show does replay on your way to work every Monday, 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern. I guess probably not on your way to work if you're on the East Coast, but that's the replay time every Monday, so check it out, 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern. Mike, the G1 aired very late last night. Have you watched it yet?
I have watched most of it. I think I've watched what really matters, which is that main event.
Did you see the lovely lass that came out with, what's his name?
Yujiro Takahashi?
Yujiro Takahashi, yeah.
Yes.
Miao Chan was her name. Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the that was Miao Chan. It doesn't really matter. He's got a cavalcade of women that he trades. Miao Chow.
Got it?
God.
I waited all day for that one. So laugh, damn it.
He's got a cavalcade of women that
Not like this
about.
One.
I know. And
not like this one.
A new one into the mix who was not going to be shown up by Miss Maria Kanellis being there. She was going to go full bore and get in her full gear. I guess I will, as we are talking about the G1, I will try to tweet out some pictures that will give people some idea of this young lady's skill set.
Please do. It was actually ironically hilarious that she was dressed as a cat, yet could not get up and down the stairs without great assistance.
The outfit was very tight, I guess. I don't know.
Is it wrong that's the second most important thing on the entire tournament to me? Maybe the first.
No, not at all. Hey, look, it's what's making Yujiro relevant after he had a disastrous G1 a couple years ago where that was his big coming out party. It was going to be, you know, sink or swim. Would he be able to take off with his last year with his new heel persona? And he won the NEVER title from Ishii, and it was like, okay, here we go. Where are we going to be at with Yujiro? and then he almost killed Ishii in the G1. He had bad match after bad match, and he is now relegated to basically being the third match comedy guy, but the wound of having that happened is kind of soothed over a little bit, because I guess if you're going to be stuck with a mid-card comedy gimmick, it may as well be more like a Val Venus than a Sparky Plug.
Now, how did he almost kill Yujiro? I didn't hear this story.
Well, no, he almost killed Ishii.
Ishii.
You know, the thing about Ishii is when he is...
Everybody almost kills Ishii.
Well, that's the thing.
Everybody doesn't?
He kills himself, so it's really bad when you have Yujiro dropping him and being all sloppy and everything, and he actually gets hurt, and you're like, oh my god, you know, it's one thing when Ishii kills himself or kills in the in an epic type of encounter, much like he had with Michael Elgin yesterday, but it's another thing when you're actually worried about him getting hurt because of somebody else's sloppiness and not his own insanity. And Yujiro did that, as well as, again, having bad match after bad match. That was the thing with the G1 this year that a lot of people were wondering about when it came to Michael Elgin coming over from ROH. No matter what you think about Michael Elgin, this was going to be a massive test, and there were a lot of people that did not believe he was anywhere near up to the test of going out there night after night and squaring off with these guys. He ended up being the perfect man for the job and did one hell of a job. And unlike Yujiro last year in the G1, his stock is now, his spot in New Japan, at least in the immediate future, is absolutely concrete right now, because match after match, night after night, he held up his end of the deal and excelled. And that's what the G1 can do for you.
See, I don't think people gave Michael Elgin enough credit, because, yes, Michael Elgin he's a little nuts, but he's had some really, really good matches here in the U.S. and in Ring of Honor over the last couple of years now. He's a big, strong, powerful American, and I'm not surprised that he got over. I mean, I didn't expect him to go over there and work matches like Tanahashi or Nakamura. But as far as like going over there and having good matches and showcasing his power and such, I'm not surprised at all that he was impressing people over there.
Well, that's what, coming in, I had some reservations about him. I was not as hateful as some people, Adam Summers, who tweeted out his apology, you know, earlier on today. But, you know, Michael Elgin's a very polarizing figure. You either like him and you like what he does and you appreciate the athleticism and you know how strong he is and you appreciate what he's trying to do and trying to be, or you just think he's a black hole of charisma. You don't like him. You look at, you know, the Strongs and the Lethals and the Briscoes and everybody else in ROH and you wonder the Adam Coles, and you look at Elgin and you go, eh. And there are a lot of people that came in, they just don't like Michael Elgin. And whether you... But regardless, whether you believe this is either a redemption story or a verification of what Michael Elgin is, the bottom line is, you know, he excelled and his stock has gone up. You know, again, ROH, he's been treading water a lot, you know, for the most part. This is something that at least has, I would believe, or should have at least revitalized him in a lot of people's minds. And I think there's a lot of people that they may be doing it begrudgingly, but you have got to give him the credit he deserves for going out there. And look, maybe he doesn't translate here compared to a lot of other guys. I personally don't believe he does. As far as his charisma goes and things like that, I won't have anything against him. I just, there are a ton of guys that I prefer watching more.
Yeah, but listen.
Hold on. But in the... Look, Scott Norton was not a star here. He was a star in Japan.
Exactly.
There's lots of guys who can be stars, you know, that are not going to be... Again, I put more emphasis on a little bit more on entertainment and colorfulness and things like that. So, yeah, I'll take Jay Lethal or I'll take Adam Cole over Michael Elgin. That's not a knock or an insult against Michael Elgin. It's my personal preference.
But
watching him in Japan, like, I didn't want to watch Scott Norton on Nitro, but I liked seeing Scott Norton wrestle in New Japan.
All right, let me get a word in here.
Go ahead.
It's not even about personal taste. My whole point was, and this also played out elsewhere on the show last night, in the Young Bucks match actually. As you noted, Scott Norton was a way bigger star in Japan than he was in America. Big, strong, powerful guy. Tensai was a way bigger star when he was in New Japan than when he came back to WWE. Big, strong, powerful guy. Michael Elgin is very likely he's going to end up a way bigger star in Japan than he's been in America. Big, strong, powerful guy. It's very much like when you watch the Young Bucks. I'm not, listen, I'm not about to say that the Young Bucks never have great matches in Japan. I'd be out of my mind. But the match that they had last night would have translated significantly better in the U.S. It would have gotten over way bigger in PWG. It would have gotten over way bigger in Ring of Honor. And that's not to say that anything was good, bad, or indifferent. It's just some things work better in some places than others. And Michael Elgin looks like a guy who is tailor-made for New Japan, more so than he is for Ring of Honor.
I absolutely agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. And again, it's just the most impressive thing with him is, even if you were a fan of Michael Elgin, you had to go, okay, just because of how this tournament is set up, and it has been easier than the last couple of years, but you know, this is a guy who put a lot of pressure on himself, may have put too much on himself the last couple times New Japan has come over here to this country, and we all know about his frustrations with not being invited over there earlier, but people still weren't sure if he could go night after night and have that New Japan quote-unquote, you know, special kind of match each time out. And he did that. And he did that against everybody, and he looked good against everybody, and then caps it off with that banger against Ishii. And, you know, no matter what any opinion you had about Michael Elgin going into it, you have got to give him his respect coming out of it.
I mean, really, I didn't hear Adam, and he did apologize, but...
Oh, there were a lot of guys.
I know, but come on, Michael Elgin and Ishii, you didn't think this could possibly be a good match? Two big bulls just running into each other. I mean, how could it not be good?
A great sawed-off, mean guy, wide man beat-down battle. It was. If you haven't seen it, that's one you need to go out of your way to find.
Let's head to a break, everybody. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Tokyo Dome. We got a lot of WWE and UFC news later on today as well. No phone calls yet, so if you're desperately trying to call, stand by. We'll be picking those up a little bit later on here in the next 2 hours. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. I'm being bombarded with people asking, why did you refer to the Stephen Amell match at SummerSlam as a mixed tag? Because I'm tired!
Well, it is a mixed tag.
It is a mixed tag. One of them is an actor. Hunter even said, you're not one of us. So, Mike, if I tagged you with someone who's not one of us, that'd be a mixed tag.
Well, if you think about it, not only is Stephen Amell not a one of them, often week after week after week, in fact, Wade Barrett is not looked at as an equal on par to anyone either. So he kind of fits perfectly into that match.
Let's talk about this main event last night. It was not too bad.
11 billion stars.
Hiroshi Tanahashi and Shinsuke Nakamura for the G1 finals. And a match, by the way, that I would say virtually everybody thought that Nakamura was going to win going in. And he didn't. Tanahashi won. And they're setting up Tanahashi and Okada at the Tokyo Dome. Provided that Tanahashi does not lose his G1 briefcase, which is much like the Money in the Bank briefcase, except that somebody can beat you for it. So they're either going to do a deal where, like, Nakamura beats him for the briefcase, or they're going to do the obvious storyline that Okada has never beaten Tanahashi at the Tokyo Dome, and now it's torch passing time. The match was unbelievable. Sometimes you see a match like the John Cena-Kevin Owens matches, where John Cena and Kevin Owens, especially in a third match, it was like they wrestled for 3 minutes, and then they had 20 minutes of near falls, and they kicked out of every move in the world. This match was a little bit better structured. They wrestled for about 15 minutes and then started kicking out of near falls. But it wasn't just kicking out of near falls, but it was a look of pain and frustration and anger. Nakamura's facial expressions every time Tanahashi kicked out of a bomaye were unreal. This man, his world crashed around him every time this man kicked out of his move. It was devastating to him. And they worked this match like it was the epic battle to end all epic battles. Like, there will never be another wrestling match. This was the most epic struggle in the history of pro wrestling. And finally, Tanahashi, after, I believe, the sixth high fly flow at some point during the match, finally pinned the guy. I don't even want to say this, but I'm gonna. The only thing that I didn't like about this, and there was something, which was that they both were on their feet within about a minute of the match ending. I mean, the way they were selling in this match, I thought they'd both have to be stretchered out. And it is a very, 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 very minor nitpick, because the match was so unbelievably awesome. I mean, you got to go out of your way to see this. And Mike, having seen a lot of great New Japan matches this year, was this the best one you've seen?
Yeah, I think it was. And I think it there are probably other ones that you watch with the Japanese announcing that maybe you like better, or maybe comes across. The thing with this one is, I think people on Saturday morning when this show aired Eastern time in the States live on New Japan World, once Tanahashi won, there were a lot of people that went, okay, we see what they're doing here. You know, Nakamura, I think still, if you stood on the outside or were a casual fan, you go, oh, Nakamura's probably going to win this thing. But as soon as Tanahashi won, it's like, okay, here we go. To the point where people started to push back. There was a certain segment of people that started to push back and didn't want to see Tanahashi Nakamura again and then go on and see Tanahashi Okada again. I'm the reverse of that, because Okada he still has not gotten that Tokyo Dome victory, and he has not gotten that spotlight because of Tanahashi, once beating him last year, which caused him to walk out of there in tears and just an emotional meltdown.
That was unbelievably great.
So, so great. And the year before that, his match with Tetsuya Naito for the world title was put in the back burner because of Tanahashi's popularity, and he and Nakamura faced off for the IC title in the main event. So he needed to get comeuppance. He needs to get comeuppance on Tanahashi. He needs to seal the deal. He needs to do it with Nakamura as well, too, but he's got to beat Tanahashi on the big stage, and then we'll really know that we are turning the page, and it will be all about Okada. Is it really right now anyway? Of course it is. But these storylines matter in New Japan, and Tanahashi and Nakamura. And there's a guy on Twitter, and Eki Odi, and I would suggest everybody, and I'll tweet his name out there and what his handle is. Because if
already
you,
done.
He's so great because he lets you know what the announcers are talking about. And if you've watched Nakamura and Tanahashi for a long time, and there's not a lot of people who have for, you know, 10 years, you know, when Nakamura was the supernova, and this is, I mean, just a completely different time in New Japan. A lot of the things that they did early in their career, because you think about it, it's like these guys have wrestled a million times. They've had a million 5-star matches. They've gone an hour. What more can they do? They hearkened back to every key moment in every key match that they've had in their history, back to the very first match they had. Right back to the very first one. And with them kicking out of each other's moves and them hearkening back and the announcers explaining what was happening of how much these guys were going at it. It translates anyway, even if you didn't know that. Just by watching it, you could see these guys pulling out literally everything. And like you said, I'm surprised they got up so quickly, because once they rang the bell and the match was over, those two laid there like they were dead, and they could have laid there for a half hour and you would have believed it. That's how epic this match was. But with all of that all in, this was a generationally important match. This was, to me, it's not the bookend. They're going to continue to wrestle again down the line. This, to me, I don't know how they top it. This was the ultimate Nakamura Tanahashi match. And it's almost just like the checkmate on, you know, those two guys being the Muda and Chono, or Hashimoto and Chono, however you want to look at it, guys in Japan of their generation. I mean,
Chono,
it was just,
and Muda, they were right there.
Yeah, I mean, just one huge exclamation point. And that fanfare afterwards with, you know, Chono being Mr. G1 and getting in there and having Muda on commentary, and just it was just... New Japan is the best at doing things right now all around. You know, WWE puts on a bigger, you know, production and a bigger show and everything, but in ring, they just can't do what those guys in New Japan do, and it was just an epic match.
Now let's talk about the second most important thing on the show, which, believe it or not, is not AJ Styles pinning the champion. Stuff like that happens all the time. Second most important thing on the show was right before intermission, when they brought out Tenryu, 65 years old. Tenryu wanted to know who his opponent was going to be for his retirement match coming up in November. And to cut to the chase, Tenryu's opponent for his final ever match is, in fact, the IWGP Heavyweight Champion, Okada. What?
Hey. Who else are you going to... I would have... You know, Tanahashi.
Who else? Anybody?
Tanahashi. Well, Tanahashi makes the most sense. But look, you know, go out against the champion. You're going to lose. It only helps Okada. It only helps Okada in the history books. You know, look what Tenryu's done for his profession and for many, many people. You know, for that gruff exterior, the fact that he's got lumps, if you hear him talk, it's like, you know, it's if sandpaper, you know, mixed with, I don't know what it is, you know, that his voice sounds like a box of gravel. He's just this, you know, intense, scary figure who hit really hard and who's just a legend. And everybody's got nothing but great things to say about him. So why not send him out the way a great former IWGP champion and one of the most important pieces in their history, in the entire history of the company? Why not have him go out against Okada?
I'll tell you why.
I mean, why?
Because one of them is very, very athletic and very, very fast and very, very flashy. And the other one is virtually immobile. So wouldn't it make more sense to find another ground-based, doesn't even have to be an old guy, but even like a Minoru Suzuki, I think would be actually, I think they'd have a hell of a match, those two guys. I'm sure this match will be decent, but it just seems like with the age difference and the immobility of Tenryu, it seems like it's going to be a massive styles clash.
Yeah, but Yuji Nagata, I know, would be great. Hiroshi Tanahashi would be great. In fact, Tanahashi would probably be the best one. But you know what? It's okay. It's not like in the States or anything like that. I mean, Okada can carry Tenryu. And I fully believe that. Yeah, he's, to me, he knows how to work his height and work his speed and work his athleticism around other guys. We've seen him do it around everybody in New Japan. And yes, he's had a lot of great equals matches, but he's also faced off against everybody. And he's had to deal with Nakanishi, and he's had to deal with other guys. And I just, to me, I know, I fully believe that Okada can live up to his end of the deal. Would I have taken Tanahashi and have that make more sense? Sure, but I believe Okada getting the rub of this and being able to be in there, and Tenryu going out against the IWGP champion, you know, I guarantee you this will work out just fine.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment, and we will be taking your phone calls as well. 1-800-878-PLAY is the phone number. That is 1-800-878-PLAY. I'll throw out all of the other numbers that are available on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com as well. So back in a moment, Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Yes, you are. We are back here on the show, Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi. We're going to open up the phone line, start taking some phone calls here, and we'll get back to all of the news a little bit later on. We got a lot of people waiting around to talk to you, the listeners. So let's go to the Parts Unknown line. You're on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Brian. This is Mark from Newfoundland, Canada.
Newfoundland, Canada. What's going on?
Yeah, I'm really Parts Unknown. I'm actually calling you on a satellite phone right now.
Those are expensive.
Wow.
Yeah, well, the company's paying for it, so I don't care.
How much do they charge you a minute for those satellite phones?
I have absolutely no idea.
Oh, my God. Thank God.
I said I'm going to call on the Wrestling Observer Live, as I've been a listener since 2005, so, and I really could have called the first-time callers line, too, by all rights. But I just want to call and tell you that you guys, I appreciate everything you guys do for us. Like, you, I don't know, the best, you know, $10.99 I've ever spent in my life. Like, 10 years I've been listening to you, and I work in the middle of the woods for 12 hours a day, and your shows are basically what get me through those 12 hours.
Ah, well, thank you.
I thank everyone on the site, everybody. I love you all. And is there any topics tonight?
I got a topic for you. I mean, what are you doing out in the woods for 12 hours? Are you hunting? Are you logging? Or are you searching for Bigfoot?
I haven't seen Bigfoot yet, although I have been looking. I'm mostly just watching it for bears, kind of like Brian up in Alaska.
I could have used you about 2 weeks ago.
We're working on a big project here. I'm a paramedic up here.
How about that?
we just sit in the woods and make sure no one gets hurt, basically. So I do nothing most days.
Well, the lines are open, so whatever you want to talk about, the floor is yours.
I mostly just wanted to tell you that I appreciate everything you do and all the hard work you put in, and I just had a question about next year's WrestleMania, actually.
Sure.
I wanted to know if you knew any of the top matches or what they're planning on doing. I know they were looking at getting Ronda Rousey in, which is going to be, you know, hit and miss with Dana White. But are they still planning on doing Rock and Triple H, or what are they going to do there?
Well, Rock and Triple H, I would say, is pretty much close to done. The Ronda Rousey fight, if you had to ask me right now, is Ronda Rousey going to wrestle at WrestleMania this year? And you put a gun to my head. Believe it or not, I would say no. And it actually has nothing to do with Dana White. I think that her schedule this spring is not going to allow it. That's all I'll say about that. So I don't actually think she's working, but they'd love to have her. And who even knows? I mean, if everything goes as planned, I'm sure she can move heaven and earth and do the show or whatever. But my gut tells me she's not doing it, but the Rock is, and probably Undertaker and Brock again would be my guess, based on the SummerSlam match. There have been rumors. I will say that there have been rumors that they may do Undertaker Sting, which Vince has been very much against. But if you've been following WWE, you know that Vince can have his mind changed. And of course, if he has decided on that, his mind could be changed again by WrestleMania. So all of this stuff is very, very tentative. He had a card of the top seven matches in his head a couple of months ago. I don't know what everything was, but he apparently had a plan. So I think we'll probably get some ideas at SummerSlam.
Of course, that leaves out a bunch of the guys who are from today's era, too, which, you know, you have Reigns and Rollins would probably make some sense, you know. Of course, will we still be seeing Randy Orton and Sheamus by that point?
Could. You know what? I think that here's my prediction. You ready for this? I think that on next Sunday at SummerSlam, when it's over, I think we're going to know if they're going to do Undertaker versus Brock or if they're going to do Undertaker versus Sting. I think we're going to know next Sunday for WrestleMania.
Hmm. Well, I guess we'll find out. I mean, I still think, to me, if you're going to do, and I like the idea of Undertaker and Sting, if Sting has got to get some wins here going into this, because I don't know if you're not going to have the Undertaker lose twice at WrestleMania. Certainly not at this WrestleMania, I wouldn't think. So if you're going to do Sting, Sting's got to have something, you know, because maybe he doesn't care, but coming over and losing repeatedly, even if he gets a win in a six-man or however.
Well, that's probably
work.
What it would be. September, he would get the pin on Bray Wyatt or one of the other Wyatt family.
And does he
geeks.
Then again, but then does he face Bray Wyatt later at like a Royal Rumble or something like that? To me, he's got to wrestle somebody one or two times in the meantime, most certainly at Royal Rumble, because he's got to have something going into that match with The Undertaker then. And I don't think a win over Bray Wyatt, the Survivor Series, is enough.
Well, at the end of the day, he's Sting. And I mean, some people are going to disagree with this, but honest to God, if Sting didn't wrestle one single match between now and WrestleMania, I still think people are going to care a lot about Undertaker and Sting, just because it's never been done. It's two guys kind of with the same gimmick, kind of, sort of, not really, but you know what I mean? So
They're both gimmicks.
Yeah, they're both very much, one's a vigilante, one guy's dead. By the way, David here says, have you experienced any buffering issues with the WWE Network recently? Seems lately the streaming is downright awful. Funny you should ask, David.
Remember, FCC violations, Brian.
I have never had one single solitary buffering issue with a pay-per-view. I've never had one single solitary buffering issue with a live stream. In the sense that when they do Beast in the East, actually, I didn't watch that live, but I've never had I didn't have a problem with that either. Never have a problem with NXT. But when I go back into that archive and I try to watch Nitro, it is a nightmare. It is a nightmare. Now, I don't have the world's greatest internet. I don't have 100-100 like Mike has. I got 35-35. But 35-35 should still be good enough to not have any issues. And again, I never have any issues with the pay-per-views. So there is, there has to be, in my opinion, a bandwidth allocation issue in the sense that they allocate a lot of bandwidth for the pay-per-views and for the shows like NXT that people are watching every week. But for the stuff in the archive, they're allocating very, very little. And so it is a nightmare to watch it. I've heard people say they've tried to watch old Nitros, they've tried to watch old pay-per-views, they've tried to watch old TV, and they always have these buffering issues. And without violating the FCC indecency laws, I will say that I would really like if they allocated some of the money that they're allocating to, for example, Jerry Springer, and use that to bump the bandwidth up for some of those archived shows. Because I realize that some people do watch Jerry Springer, but I never hear anybody talking about it. It's not like one single solitary person is going to quit the network because the Jerry Springer show has been canceled. Now, I don't think a lot of people are going to quit because of the bandwidth issues on some of the older shows, but it is very, very frustrating as a viewer to have to sit through that. So I would much rather they allocated some money to that as opposed to some of these stupid shows that nobody's watching.
I'd be all for that. Again, I haven't had the same problems that a lot of other people have had. Very spotty with the Apple TV as far as having problems. Usually if I have any problems at all, it's actually streaming it on my computer is where I've had the most issues. But anything else, I seem to be okay. But then again, I also don't go deep in the archives anymore because most of the stuff that's there, I don't want to see or I already have. So it does, you know, if they're cutting back and they obviously went way, they started this thing with spending a lot of money and a lot of money they, I guess, regret spending now or in places that they regret spending it. It does not bode well. And it's not like things are good right now anyway, but it certainly doesn't bode well in the future for them adding up anything that they don't need to, which would be old Madison Square Garden shows and old Mid-Atlantics and old Georgia championships and a lot of things that people like me would really like to see up on there. If they're cutting back on allocation on bandwidth or if that's one of the issues, we'll never see it up there.
Let's go to Paul. Paul, you are on the air. What's going on?
Oh, hi there. I'm right now watching a replay of last night's G1 climax on New Japan World, but what I'd like to talk about is another show that I caught earlier this week. I finally got around watching the Journey into Chikara show, which streams each Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on their YouTube channel. And obviously this is in the same class as the New Japan show, but it's a very easy-to-watch show. It's fairly brief, and it has some very cool production values. And this week we had a very fun match with Amasus and John Francesco de Coronado. But what really impressed me about this was the quality of the color commentary, because Mike Quackenbush and Leonard F. Carson, you got all these wacky, larger-than-life characters, but they played extremely straight. And I think that really adds to the quality of the product.
Why don't you give that a plug one more time where people can check it out?
Okay, well, if you just search in Chikara on YouTube, it'll come in. It streams live every Saturday at 7 p.m., and there is a replay on a Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
All right, well, I want to thank you very much for the call. I love when people call and they hear commentary, and it is good commentary. I think that people are so used to the terrible commentary on Raw that pretty much anything will be a vast improvement. But I'm sure I've had Mike and Quackenbush on the show many times. And I believe Leonard Carson as well. And I'm sure they're very good. Let's go to Ryan in Cumberland. Ryan, what's up?
I want to talk about something I saw last night. EC3 defended the TNA championship outside of TNA wrestling for, well, I think, the first time.
Okay, we'll talk about it.
Okay, it was Vicious Outcast Wrestling. He defended against Andrew Palace, and it took him about 11 minutes, and he appeared to turn babyface after the match as he shook Andrew Palace's hand and even gave him a hug. I guess we're lucky we even saw the match because Super Oprah ruined the ring about the third match in running the ropes.
Super Oprah broke the ring?
Yes. She also flirted with EC3, and EC3 seemed to like it because he like did stuff with his eyebrows, like the people's eyebrow, like The Rock does. So I think he was a little bit excited.
Wow.
When Super Oprah was.
That is a good indication that he liked this. Do you think, Ryan, that Super Oprah may end up on Impact as a result of this performance and flirting with EC3?
I don't know. He might put a good word in for Dixie Carter. You never know, since that's his auntie.
You're right. That is, in fact, his aunt. I want to thank you very much for the call, Ryan. Super Oprah breaking the ring last night in breaking news. Let's go to Tony. Tony, you're on the air. Hey, Tony, what's going on?
Oh, not too much. Just had a couple of things. Well, first of all, Brian, I love your weeping gimmick on the BMV show. It's very convincing.
And thank then, you. Worked very hard on that.
And then what I really had is that listening to Jericho podcast and with New Day and Vince is completely out of touch. They explained like the original gimmick and wasn't no way he was going to get over, so he just, you know, went over the top with it. They knew we were going to end up heels anyway.
You mean new coat of paint?
Exactly. Like, so they kind of like played Vince to a certain degree. Like, you know, they kind of like gamed him because they knew where it's going to end up. And then the biggest thing is like he called Woods Zeke for like months, and that's not his real name or his work name. Like, you know, you think he would know the name of his employees. So,
you know, it's funny. I want to thank you very much for the call. You know, what's funny about that is I don't know what it is, but I always forget Xavier Woods' name. Always. Like, I never forget Big E's name. I never forget Kofi's name. I don't know if it's because I don't have anybody in my life that I've ever met named Xavier. I don't know if it's because I just associate him with Consequences Creed. I don't know what it is, but I always forget his name. We're going to head to a break. Back in a moment with more Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Back here on Wrestling Observer Live, Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Got a long break coming up here, so we'll take phone calls after the top of the second hour. I got a couple of notes here. Had one person emailing me regarding the buffering issues, and they note, my internet is a 50 down, 25 up, and I've had buffering with Nitro as well. Not a nightmare, but it often goes very low quality for extended periods of time. And we also had somebody here on Twitter that said lots of buffering issues with archived stuff. Live streams are generally fine, and the time of day affects it a bit too, I have noticed. So certainly there's plenty of people that are having this issue with some of the older shows. Again, as noted, it doesn't seem to be a big deal with the live events. Every time I go online and during the pay-per-views, there's a million people on Twitter talking about how the show is unviewable to them. I've never, ever had that problem. And obviously, there are always going to be cases where the issue is on your end and not WWE's end. But as a viewer, when I have no problems ever with the pay-per-views and constant weekly problems with Nitro, that to me suggests the problem is probably not on my end for those Nitros, because I don't have a problem any other time. And I never have issues with Hulu. I never have issues with Netflix. I had zero issues last night. I was, believe it or not, I streamed New Japan World on my phone to my TV via AirPlay. I had no problems all night long. It was perfect. But anyway, we're going to head to a break. We'll be back in a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Sport Zone, the American Forces Network, Cable Radio Network, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn Radio. List goes on and on. The most listened to daily pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the world. Got a lot of stuff to talk about in the next hour. And by the way, if you are not a subscriber, boy, have you missed out this week. I have got a list of everything you've missed out on since Monday. Monday, Wrestling Observer Radio talking Raw, the build is SummerSlam, a back issue of the Wrestling Observer newsletter from 1998. Tuesday, Brian and Vinny and Craig show talking Raw, Craig's photo bomb and the Stephen Amell deal. WCW Monday Nitro, Wednesday, Figure 4 Daily with Lance Storm, Observer Radio talking Impact, SmackDown, Anderson Silva, and more. and a brand new Observer talking SummerSlam, unions courting UFC fighters, and more. Thursday, Observer Radio with Jim Ross, Brian and Vinny Show talking the Lucha Underground finale, as well as NXT with our buddy Jim, as well as the annual weekly Granny segment. Classic audio on Friday, Brian and Vinny talking the SummerSlam Go Home Raw from 2008. Saturday, Observer Radio. We recorded at 3 a.m. last night to get the news on the G1 finals ready for everybody when they woke up this morning. Got a Brian and Vinny show tonight, and of course, as a subscriber, you also get immediate downloads after the show ends of Wrestling Observer Live, commercial-free. So if you're not a subscriber, I'm telling you, you are missing out. So much awesome stuff up there, not to mention, not just everything that I talked about there, but we archive everything. Every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005 is in the archives right now. That is over 7,000 hours of audio available for subscribers right now. So head up and check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. Phone lines are open. We're going to take calls after the break. The numbers are available at WrestlingObserver.com. Plus, you can call 1-800-878-PLAY and get on the Sports Byline here on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Taking phone calls here today. 1-800-878-PLAY is the phone number. That's 1-800-878-PLAY. We got all sorts of people on the line. Let's go to the east of the Rockies line. You're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's Danny Hernandez. How are you?
What's up, Danny?
And first, I want to say on your review of Ultima Lucha, you had one heck of a line using, so you said, like, the Black Lotus used the D-Mock and the Death Touch to kill Dragon Azteca.
The D-Mock, that's right.
Yeah, the Death Touch. But my question is, because Angelico and Jack Evans, they were on MLW Radio with Conan, and they brought up the question, like, because they said, like, there were some pretty incredible dark matches that they filmed, and they asked Conan if they probably put it on YouTube, and he was like, hopefully, because there were some great matches, some of these dark matches that were pretty good to have. Since my question is, since Lucha Underground isn't doing nothing until next year, couldn't they release these dark matches, like, on El Rey or on like, some sort of website to keep the fans, you know, get something to fans' taste before next year? Or that's possible.
I mean, I'm sure they could do whatever they wanted. I want to thank you very much for the call. I've not heard anything in that direction, but I mean, there's no reason they couldn't. I have no answer other than there's no reason they couldn't.
I think if I'm them, I keep those in the vault until you have another deal announced, because it's going to be so long as you tape vignettes and you do the filming of the show and you get everything together. And by the time you get it done, it's going to be a long time from the, you know, when the time the show has ended now. It's going to be a long time before we see what would be a full-scale season two. So I think holding on to those until you get something, you know, actually announced and going, you can roll those out later on and kind of lead them into the season two. And if it doesn't happen at all, keep them in the vault and hold it off for a Netflix or a DVD release of season one.
Let's go to Tim. Tim, you are on the Sports Byline. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. What's up?
Not much. Last night's New Japan show was pretty epic. I loved it. It was my first time watching it. And I just wanted to say that, you know, this month I think might be one of the best months to be a fan of pro wrestling. In general, you had the Ultima Lucha, now with the G1, and you still got NXT and SummerSlam coming up. So I'm thinking this might be one of the best months of pro wrestling in a long time.
You're right. And last August as well, with the G1 last August and all of the NXT stuff they were doing then. I want to thank you very much for the call. August has been a very, very good month to be a wrestling fan. And on top of that, it's not just August. I mean, if you have been a wrestling fan over the last, 2 years? I mean, between New Japan on Access, New Japan World, the WWE Network, NXT, WWE, Lucha Underground. I mean, there's so much good wrestling out there.
ROH TV.
ROH on Sinclair. I mean, we're not in a boom period from a business standpoint, because business-wise, I mean, there's still a lot of issues. The SmackDown rating this week It's funny. I guess Everett is better than Portland. They always look at weird reasons why ratings are down, and city is sometimes called into effect, even though 99% of fans watching television don't care where the show's emanating from. But SmackDown died a death in the ratings this week. I mean, it was way, way down. But, I mean, business-wise, it's not like these low ratings are hurting WWE at all. I mean, it may hurt them when it's time for a renewal. But business-wise, WWE is doing great. They're making tons of money. And as a fan, while we're not in a business boom period, we are in an artistic boom period, and it's great.
And one you didn't mention there that should be mentioned is Evolve, which is always the kind of the one that gets forgotten about, but the WWNLive.com, you know, setup that Gabe Sapolsky has is great to access a lot of different things. And when you look at their group with Zack Sabre Jr. and Timothy Thatcher and Chris Hero, and for at least right now, Johnny Gargano and Biff Busick and Rich Swann. I mean, they have guys that can go, Drew Gulak, and they have faced off against each other. And granted, it's been for PWG and sometimes for other places. But when you include all of this into the mix, yes, you have to pay for it. Yes, you sometimes have to go out of your way or try a new or a different technology. But anybody that can complain right now is out of their minds, or they're trolling or whatever, because whether it's AAA on YouTube, CMLL, a number of different ways, or any number of different promotions from around the world, you have more access now to things than ever, and more chances to support them directly than ever as well, too.
Bert Rangel, bless his heart, has tweeted out the link to the Instagram of Catwoman last night. I have tweeted it out to the world. You can all thank Bert, as I have vigorously here. Let's go to the Parts Unknown line. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
It's Ed, and I want to thank Bert, too.
Thank you, Bert.
And, Brian, I don't know. There's some big news that came out Friday, but I never heard you or Dave report it, and that is that the WWE released some new NXT T-shirts, including featuring one blue pants. What are your thoughts on this breathtaking news?
Breathtaking, Ed, is the best way that I can term it. My breath has been taken away knowing that there are new Blue Pants T-shirts out. Hey, it's great for her.
I do have a serious question about these new NXT T-shirts, and it's not just the ones that came out Friday. It seems like a pattern that by large, these are like the most horrible looking T-shirts and designs. I think kindergartens could actually do better jobs. Why do you think the NXT shirts are so bad?
I don't have an answer for you, Ed, but I'm glad you mentioned that, because I didn't want to be the guy to have to say that the Blue Pants T-shirt is ungodly. Ungodly terrible. It is a shirt.
I did order one.
And there's a pair of blue sweatpants on it. She doesn't even wear sweatpants.
And then, but the wacky print on the back that says, like, 70s style, not 70s. I don't even know how to describe the font that says Blue Pants, but I think it's a little bit of the whole wacky T-shirt thing, you know, just like, you know, a picture of Canada that says America's hat or something. I think they're trying to play, you know, wacky, like you'd see on the boardwalk in the summertime, goofy shirt. And I think to that audience, Ed bought it. I mean, they are into supporting their people. And I think they're trying to do a little bit of a takeoff on some of those goofball type of shirts.
Well, they've successfully taken, they are very bad. I want to thank you very much for the call, Ed. I'm sure that Blue Pants is very, very thankful.
This girl's Instagram, the Yujiro girl, is Muffin030Ass.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's
plenty
apropos.
Of pictures of it.
John, you are on the byline. What's going on?
Not much. I just wanted to comment on a lot of the great stuff that there is out there. I discovered that Rev Pro deal out of England, who's one of New Japan's partners. I love one of the matches they've got booked upcoming, the Stone Pitbull, Tomohiro Ishii, and Big Damo. Man, you want to talk about two guys that are just going to be incredible watching these two monsters just slam into each other. It's it's really a great time now for wrestling fans. You couple in WN Live with the Evolve group, you couple in New Japan, and I'm not going to be one of those people that's going to be too harsh on the Tenryu and Okada match. Granted, I don't think it's probably the best match for Tenryu, but hey, it is what it is.
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call, John. Yes, there is great wrestling everywhere, as we noted, and I just pray. Forget all of the others. I just want Lucha Underground to come back. It's all I want.
Know. It's so sad.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when they shut down my Mongolian grill. I mean, people honest to God think that I'm just like joking around or something like that, but it's really, it sounds...
This is part of your daily routine.
Yeah, this sounds so stupid, but it has affected me. Like, I'm really sad that it's gone, and every day I drive by and I'm like, I feel like that with Lucha Underground. There's my crying gimmick for that guy that called earlier. Back in a moment with more Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, do you know what this clicking noise is right here?
I don't. I'm too into hearing Rocky IV themes.
It's me shutting down Muffin Ass's Instagram because I was so distracted.
Do you mind if I leave mine open?
No, you got to shut that thing down.
Oh, fine.
Very distracting. Let's go to Tan the Man. Tan, you're on the air.
Hey, Brian, Mike. It's good to hear you all. Yours truly has returned to grace my presence on your show.
Is this low key?
No, but he is a close friend of mine.
Okay. Tan, what's up?
Hey, not much. Hey, two really quick things that I know time is probably limited, of course. First thing, of course, Lucha Underground. Yeah, I got a chance to finally watch it on YouTube, though, the season finale, because unfortunately I don't have that channel in my market. I was just, like, blown away. It posed a thought, though. You know, is there any possibility if they couldn't get back on the El Rey Network and they could shop around a deal, if MTV could be an option? Because, look, they had Lucha Libre a few years back, and that was nothing really to write home about. And then, I guess, a couple of years prior to that was Wrestling Society X, and we already know what happened with that as well. That was one question. And then the second thing is, you know, as an observation with Ring of Honor, since they've been on Destination America, I think the one constructive criticism I would say about them, if they could just spike up their ratings somewhat, if that they would just put more emphasis on putting better quality matches either in their opening match or their main event. Because even though as great as Ring of Honor is, people like The Kingdom and The Decade aren't doing them any favors when they start off their show with them.
All right, Tan. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for the call. In terms of your first question / statement about maybe Lucha Underground going to MTV, I know that the Lucha Underground folks have made it clear that they did not spend the reported $20 million that David stated for that season. They said they spent quite a bit less. But the reality of the situation is, whatever the number was that they spent, it was a lot of money. And if you have seen the MTV wrestling shows, the budgets were much, 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 much smaller. And Lucha Underground is Lucha Underground in large part because of the great budget. I'm not sure if you put Lucha Underground on MTV and you gave them a budget of $5 million for an entire season. I mean, the reality is you're not getting Lucha Underground. And the other deal is the El Rey tie-in with Robert Rodriguez. I mean, you take Robert Rodriguez and his production company and everything out of Lucha Underground, and again, you're not going to get Lucha Underground. So to get what we had, we need that production company and we need a big budget. And without those two things, you could have a product, but you're not going to have Lucha Underground.
And the worst part is, the XFL actually, I don't know if they didn't invent the spider cam, I wouldn't think, but they utilized it. And then when the XFL went under, it's not like there was a lot to take from it, but the NFL took that spider cam, and they started using it. Now it's a gimmick for every single football game out there. There's always, you know, in fact, ESPN for college football on ESPN3 will have an alternate view of the game with just using that camera. That's it, the one that just slides up and down the field. And you look at all the things that Lucha Underground did to revolutionize wrestling, or to take wrestling and move it in a different direction, something we've all hoped and wanted, but they had the money to do it. And unfortunately, there's no NFL out there if Lucha Underground does go away to take those pieces and apply them. Only the WWE could do it. And while they have the executive producer and the chief cook and bottle washer, or whatever the, you know, Vince McMahon's, you know, role is, head booker, head man, the man in charge, until that changes and fades out and they get some new ideas in there, we probably won't see those things that were so great on Lucha Underground applied to WWE. And then when it comes to everybody else, they just flat can't afford to do it. Ring of Honor couldn't do it. TNA couldn't do it. Nobody could do it. So it's unfortunate if we don't get a second season that all of these things that made Lucha Underground great and really seemed to take wrestling in a different direction and were fresh new ideas that really worked and really clicked, we may never see those again, or we may never see them for a long time if we don't get a season two, and that's a killer.
Let's go to the east of the Rockies line. You are on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
This is Dave from Wisconsin.
What's up, Dave?
So I watched 16 out of the 19 nights of the G1 live.
Wow.
And I'm still very disappointed that Shibata has not been awarded the briefcase yet that he so rightfully deserves. And why have they not given us the Nakamura and AJ Styles singles match that has never happened before? They've only met once, and it was like back in 2008. It was a tag match between like Kurt Angle and Nakamura versus AJ Styles and Tanahashi.
Well, there's a decent possibility that maybe you'll see that match at the Dome this year.
For a title or just a special singles match?
I don't know.
It could just be a special singles match, which it won't matter if it's for a title or not. I mean, they know everybody that is a hardcore fan of New Japan. They all know that they have not faced off except for a G1 when AJ Styles was in TNA, and he was not entered in the G1. He was just in a tag match with Kurt Angle and with Tanahashi and Nakamura. They know that, and the match will happen at some point. AJ Styles is not going anywhere. And in fact, AJ Styles is probably going to be there long enough where we'll probably see a face AJ Styles. I'm not saying anytime soon, but I could definitely see a good guy AJ Styles apply his trade in New Japan before all said and done, because people are dying to cheer him. They love booing him right now, but they're dying to cheer him.
So when is Shibata going to get his big win, Mike?
Shibata doesn't need it right now, and I know people, look, I would love to see Shibata get a title shot too. You can wait for a long time because you can put Shibata in there with anybody and have great matches. It looks like they're going to be doing Shibata and Naito, which, I mean, my God, how great are those matches going to be? But when it comes to Shibata, at any point, it's like Minoru Suzuki. I'm not saying people will like this, but you could wait 5 years. It won't matter, because by the time it comes, people will be still wanting to see Shibata face off against whoever the champion is. It won't take that long. But you don't actually have to do that because Shibata is so special. Whether it was Shibata and Goto and Shibata and whoever else it is, he does not need a title match necessarily right now or before a Goto or some of the other guys who are out there.
Anything else, Dave? All right.
I just got to say, having watched all this, I was really down on Elgin at the beginning. Granted, it took me probably till the last day with Ishii to actually appreciate what he did. I really saw that he kind of grew into knowing how to work the crowd, because it seemed like he was just a caricature for like the first half of the G1, where I didn't even want to see him, where it's just like it felt like he was trying to play, he's obviously trying to be a tribute to Dr. Death Steve Williams from the robe down to a lot of his moves, but it just felt like he's what, 8 inches shorter than him, and he's trying to be almost a carbon copy. But I think finally he learned how to play more to the crowd instead of over-exaggerating everything. So I guess that's all I have to say about that, other than the one spot they went to almost every single match of every single night that I found irritating was overusing the 20 count on the outside, and then it would always get the 19 in almost every single G1 match, and then they'd jump in the last second. I know it's kind of common to do in WWE, but I hadn't seen it abused that much in Japan until this G1.
Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for the call. I do know that during the main event last night, it is the finals of the 2015 G1, and I think it was Tanahashi who was on the outside. Somebody was on the outside, and the ref is giving the 20 count, and it starts getting up to 17, 18. And when they're doing the count and it gets up to 17 and 18, it's not like in America where the referee's like, 7, 8, 9. Instead, it's like 16, 17, 18. They're like screaming. And I'm just sitting there thinking, the G1 Finals 2015 is not ending via count out. You know what I mean? It was like kind of a waste of a spot, in my opinion, because I guess they could have done it. I mean, you can do anything. But the idea that Tanahashi was going to lose the G1 Finals via count out at the 12-minute mark, I was like, I don't know about that spot.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's ludicrous, I guess, when you look at it that way. Although, the thing that New Japan has done at points in its past are, and Gato has continued this, always the surprise, whether it be Liger getting counted out
quickly. Yeah, that's a weird surprise.
I know, but it's, you know, the fact that it still will, it doesn't pop the crowd, you know, major or anything, but in a big match, in the flow of things, it did still get a reaction from the crowd, so there's still at least a little bit of something to it. Although, yeah, if you think about what these guys are hitting each other with, you know, the thought of being counted out, you know, especially when they do it so often on undercard matches and things like that, it is, I can see how you would say that.
We're going to take calls for the final segment as well, everybody. 1-800-878-PLAY is the phone number. That is 1-800-878-PLAY. We've also got 4 other numbers on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. If I've not thrown those out in a while, I'm going to do that right now. So write these down. These work all the time. 425-488-0525, East of the Rockies, 425-482-1686, Parts Unknown, 425-398-7353, and First Time Callers, 425-398-7289. All of them, front page, WrestlingObserver.com. Back in a moment with more Observer Live, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And the man himself is on the line, Jim in Virginia. Jim, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing today?
We're doing great.
Two quick questions. Mike mentioned earlier that you could watch CMLL in the United States. I'd like to know where, because I really enjoy CMLL.
The best place to go is to the Cubs fan page, which I will tweet out there. But they have a show on Terra, which is available on YouTube. They have a show on Monday nights, which comes on about 10 o'clock or so Eastern time. That comes on YouTube as well. As well as being, depending on what your cable package is, you can pick them up on over-the-air affiliates as well, including if you have Azteca America, which is... Yeah, I know there's an affiliate in the D.C. area, Jim. I don't know if there's one down by your way or not.
In
Saturday
Virginia?
Afternoons.
Well, you're better off looking on YouTube there, Jim.
That's it.
Well, I've got another question I'm going to ask. There's a big rumor going around that Vince is trying to negotiate a deal with Destination America to put NXT on there. Is any truth to that?
I have heard that there is no truth whatsoever to that rumor.
That makes zero sense to me. That rumor makes zero sense unless it's about getting on the Discovery Channel or having a plan to do something else with Discovery, because why you would want to pilfer anybody who you want to be paying for your network to put it on a channel which nobody has does not make any sense, again, unless there's some sort of strategic partnership with the entire company, which I would seriously doubt, since it would run directly in opposition to what they have with NBC Universal.
All right, Jim, I want to thank you very much for the call. Check out all that stuff. The Cubs fans website is, I always go to CMLLblog.com. LuchaBlog.com, but LuchaBlog.com is another great address to use. They all go to the same place. So head up there, Jim, and get your fill of CMLL. Phone lines are open. If you want to give us a call, you know the numbers. Front page of WrestlingObserver.com. By the way, speaking of Ring of Honor, at the G1 show last night, Delirious was there in a suit and tie and mask and long goatee. And he cut a promo in broken English, basically saying that ROH was the number one company, the number one wrestling company, he said, in the U.S. And I guess since WWE is not considered
wrestling.
Did he go
Bruce Tharp style and say ROH Ichiban?
He may have. He may have. He said they're the number one company in the U.S. for pro wrestling. New Japan, the number one company in Japan. Together, they're going to rule the world. And in 2016, he said, Ring of Honor is coming to Japan. He said they love Japan, they love the Japanese fans, they love pro wrestling, and the fans cheered and chanted ROH. And so if you're a New Japan fan, that's probably going to be something resembling the Fantastica Mania shows that they do with CMLL. But Ring of Honor mentioned a bunch of names, including Jay Lethal and Roderick Strong, heading to New Japan in 2016. So that was also news on the show last night. And as we mentioned, but didn't talk a whole lot about, AJ Styles did pin the champion. He beat Okada with the Styles Clash. It was a six-man Okada, Michael Bennett, Matt Taven against AJ Styles, Karl Anderson, and Doc Gallows. So AJ getting a big win there to set up, I'm sure, a championship match sometime in the fall. Although I'm not sure exactly when that will be, since we've already got Okada and Tenryu, and we've got Okada and Tanahashi at the Dome. What's the other big show besides those two?
What, besides the Dome show?
The Dome show and the November 15th show that the Tenryu match is on.
Those are, I think, the biggest shows. And I don't know if the Tenryu show is a Tenryu project show or if that's actually a New Japan show. If it's not, New Japan's usually in Osaka, if I'm not mistaken, in November. I'll double check and look that back up. December is usually like the Tag League, I believe it is. And the October show as well, too, is usually a big show.
So everybody's dream may come true as Jesse Ventura is, in fact, talking about potentially being a running mate for Donald Trump. What a ticket. Oh, my God. What next, Mike?
Don't ask that. As somebody pointed out, you know, this thing with Trump, I forget who it was on Twitter, said this thing with Trump would be funny except for the fact that two men who were in Predator went on to become governors of American cities or American states, and you look at it that way, well, who knows? And there could not be a better person for Donald Trump to partner up with than Jesse Ventura, because it's...
there could not be a better person, you say?
I don't think so, at least when it comes to ridiculous promos. Look, if anybody saw the debate with the Republicans that were on Fox...
I've heard some people did. 21 million of them.
Yes, and many of them watched it just to see what Trump would say. And here's a guy that actually...
He didn't do that well, like, for The Apprentice.
Well, just like a great heel, you know, didn't really say much of anything, had no concrete issues, was insulting, was kind of just beat around. And if you know, he was pressed too much. Look, I'm just saying that politicians are stupid and some of these people are stupid. And that's all he really said. And there are some people that liked him more after it. So why not have the wackiest partnership that you could possibly have with people saying ridiculous things and have Jesse, the governor, Body Ventura, and Donald Trump running on a fine ticket? And I just want to know who else you could possibly add to this cavalcade of an office if Donald Trump were to win. Who would be your Secretary of State and your Secretary of Defense? Can you imagine the people he could pick?
Trying to think of a good Secretary of Defense that would be in UFC. Who's like a really, really horrible fighter, but they're hard to beat? That'd be my Secretary of Defense.
Let's see. A horrible fighter who's hard to beat. Well, Phil Davis is gone. Phil Davis wasn't that hard to beat, I guess, either.
Not Jake Shields. He just got beaten. Fitch. That'd be my Secretary of Defense. I have John Fitch. He'd be the guy there.
Somebody who's a heel or somebody who's just a big heel.
Somebody wouldn't do much of a promo, but I guess the Secretary of Defense doesn't do a lot of promos anyway.
I don't, you know, you can, look, we could turn this around. You know, I could easily see Don Fry, as long as they leave him alone. Can you imagine him patrolling the border and being the Secretary of Defense?
Honest to God, if Don Fry were Donald Trump's running mate instead of Jesse Ventura, they may win.
They would certainly, there's a portion of the base that those two men would certainly galvanize.
This person says that Zeus played the president in Fifth Element already. Trump's missing a golden opportunity. A Trump-Zeus pairing.
You know, speaking of Japan, you know who ROH, well, not speaking of Japan at all, but let me shoehorn this in here. You know who ROH did not announce?
What do you mean did not announce? Last night?
Well, Delirious, yeah. I mean, they brought the Kingdom and Red Dragon and Roderick Strong and the Briscoes and Jay Lethal, and that's all great. I'm happy about all of that. Where is my main man, Stokely Hathaway, and where is Moose?
Well, you know, Moose may end up over there. I mean, he's I'm sure he's going to be on the list, and if he goes, then Stokely Hathaway will have a ticket there.
People would be going crazy for the Moose.
Hey, how about... How about your main girl, the exotic, Mandy Leon?
Yes.
They'd be in love with her.
Oh, man, they could bring her over there to counterbalance Maria Kanellis.
Well.
I think that's a perfect, you could have a you could have a three-way with those two and the cat lady of Muffin Ass.
Speaking of ladies, by the way, we'll speak of them respectfully here as I read the story from MMAfighting.com. Kimberly... And by the way, that's kin, as in next of kin. Kimberly Novaez was expected to make her RFA debut next week against Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger, but won't be able to step inside the cage. The Brazilian strawweight had some trouble cutting weight as soon as she signed her bout agreement to fight on August 21st, and eventually found out that she's 6 months pregnant. When she did the math, Novaez realized she fought and won an MMA fight in Brazil while pregnant.
Wow.
She defeated Renata Baldan on May 17 to win the Noxy 115-pound title, and that day she was 12 weeks pregnant. We did a morphology ultrasound last week. The doctor said I'm 24 weeks pregnant, almost 6 months, and my baby is healthy and strong. I was worried because I trained hard, fought, cut weight. I suffered a lot to make weight for my last fight, couldn't dehydrate properly, and I was already training to fight again next week, but the doctor said everything is fine. She was pregnant and won a fight at 12 weeks.
The one at 12 weeks, if she goes back another 12 weeks, now, does that come from another celebration victory? Do we know that?
Could have been. Wasn't mentioned in the story.
Well, hey, it's, women stay active when they're pregnant. I certainly wouldn't suggest taking any punches in the gut, and I think there are a lot of things you need to be worried about, but it's not like, you know, it's not like you're stuck in bed for 9 months as soon as you find out you're pregnant or whatever it is. I mean, people are out there doing things, and women are out there staying in shape, still working, having to do a lot of things. So, hey, congratulations to her, and hopefully everything goes well with the baby. And it seems like everything is fine, so this is going to happen. This is going to happen.
So this person says the New Japan upcoming big shows are Destruction, which is in September, King of Pro Wrestling, which is in October, and Power Struggle, which is in November. So I guess they could either do Destruction or King of Pro Wrestling to do that Okada match with AJ Styles.
And they should. I thought it could come down to them in the finals. They could have faced off in the finals, just because I still think they're due one more match to basically close the door on the chapter that is Styles and Okada. I think for right now, which you know they you could say they did it with the last match. They could certainly do it if they have another match, because I think Okada needs to beat Styles again, and it should just again put a period on what was one hell of a feud and really an impressive job of Styles and getting over.
Also in the news, as I mentioned at the very, very beginning of the show, we should update this. Stephen Amell, who was doing what I guess is not a mixed tag at SummerSlam. It is Stephen Amell and Neville against Stardust and Bad News Barrett. Amell was training the other day. We actually played some of the audio of him explaining this on the Friday show. He was doing some sort of power clean or something like that, and he yanked the bar into his own jaw. He bit his tongue and cracked his jaw. Now, I don't know if cracking means there's actually a crack, like a broken bone, or if he just like cracked it, like a figure of speech, but he was in some pretty bad shape when he was doing that that YouTube video or the Facebook video, but apparently he is still in training. He's back there training again, so I guess the SummerSlam match is still on.
Well, he sent out a pretty cool, actually, picture, too, of Stardust versus the Arrow with a countdown of SummerSlam, a drawing that somebody had did for him, which was really, really cool, and there's been nothing about him not doing it, so we'll see if they play this into the storyline, because if he was a real worker and a real fan, much like Craig, who wouldn't have sold the fact that he was having a good time at that show, he would have said nothing and then been jumped by Stardust
exactly.
And Barrett.
He would have said that he got attacked by them backstage. We're going to head to a break. Back in a moment with more Observer Live, Sports Byline USA Radio Network. We're back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Semper Vivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. A lot of big things coming up. If you are listening to this on a replay, or if you'd like to know when you can hear this show on a replay, SportsByline.com. The entire schedule is up there. We have 19 hours per week, I believe, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. So if you want to find out when we air, when you can check it out, SportsByline.com. Also, if you head to WrestlingObserver.com, you can always listen to the show through the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. We have a link to TuneIn Radio. If you have a smartphone, all you have to do is put the Sports Byline. Well, first you get TuneIn Radio. It is a free app. And once you get TuneIn Radio, search Sports Byline USA, and you can listen to it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on your phone. And we air Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, and daily replays at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern. Also on TuneIn Radio, you can put in Dark Matter, and you will get the Dark Matter Radio Network, also free, 24 hours a day. And tonight, Sunday night, every Sunday night on the Dark Matter Radio Network, I am up there at 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, with a 2-hour show, After Dark Radio, talking all of the strangest news you have ever heard, interviewing folks, talking about the paranormal and whatever. After Dark Radio, tonight, 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, every Sunday, Dark Matter Radio Network, also linked up on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. We are out of here. We'll be back on Monday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, every single day for a full hour. I want to thank everybody at Sports Byline, Mike as always, and all of you, the listeners. We'll talk to you again after a while with more Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network.